Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.
From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, Texas is gripped with extreme heat that's putting lives at risk. Should President Biden step in to protect Texas outdoor workers? And the Texas GOP makes voting less secure and easier to cheat. This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Texas is experiencing the hottest weather on record. Man-made climate change is warming the planet, and that's creating a stretch of days of well over 100 degrees in San Antonio. I went out to see how the high heat is impacting the community, including people who have no place to hide from the heat.
Well, yeah, I mean, not for the hookah. We need to keep you hydrated.
Maybe. It's 103 degrees, and Pete Badetta is at a homeless camp pitched in a concrete drainage ditch. He's handing out bottles of cold water, some food, and towels soaked in ice. Badetta is with the Haven for Hope outreach team. He spends his days driving around San Antonio in his pickup truck loaded with sloshing ice chests, trying to help the homeless survive the summer heat.
Need dog food?
A little bit.
You all right then?
I think so.
One of the unsheltered people here goes by Frenchie. He says he's been living here since October when he lost his house after his wife died. He's now living under a tarp, tossed over some shopping carts because his tents keep getting stolen.
It's just been rough, man. I've had a tent like three times and they stole my whole tent from me, like all three times. Crazy.
Frenchie says a constant breeze channeled by the drainage ditch makes the heat manageable, but these conditions are still dangerous, according to Dr. Rita Espinosa, the chief epidemiologist with the San Antonio Metropolitan Health Department.
So as of last week, there were just in 1 week, 60 individuals who were EMS was called out, and it was a heat-related illness. So we know that those numbers are increasing, and the higher the temperature for that week, the more incidences that we're seeing. So I think the message really needs to be on prevention so that we're not continuing to see these high numbers.
This summer has been the most dangerous in terms of heat-related illnesses in San Antonio. According to the health department, 4 of the past 5 weeks rank as the worst for heat-related illnesses since they began keeping records for that in 2018.
We saw the numbers grow in June. We were just looking at it compared from last year, and they're almost double.
Many in San Antonio are struggling with the heat. Older homes without insulation can be difficult to keep cool. Many people can't afford to run their air conditioning if they have it. Mario Martinez, MetroHealth's assistant director, says city cooling centers can provide some relief.
One of the things that we focus as a city is to ensure that we have multiple places to stay cool in our neighborhoods where we see sort of a higher equity score. And these are neighborhoods that historically have been marginalized.
Martinez says there are city libraries, community centers, and public pools that provide a break from the heat, which even for a couple of hours can make a life-saving difference.
The other thing that we believe is very important is for residents to look out for those neighbors that are older in age or have a medical condition to ensure that they're okay, to make sure that we can assist them in any way, kind of get them through this extreme heat.
And that's what Pete Badetta is doing at the homeless camp. He's talking to an elderly woman who lives here named Miss Rose. She's stooped over, frail, and her skin is a dark tan baked from the South Texas summer sun. He's trying to convince her to go to the Haven for Hope facilities and they'll work together on getting her an apartment. She says she's not ready. Maybe she'll go tomorrow. The forecast for tomorrow and the next 10 days is over 100 degrees. I'm David Martin Davies in San Antonio.
Be careful. Be careful, okay?
Is that that area?
Yes, just in general, just be careful.
The deadly heat continues across the Southwest, and an often forgotten group of those affected are hundreds of thousands of prisoners. Many inmates struggle to stay cool in aging facilities, including in Texas, where some 100,000 prisoners live in large facilities that lack air conditioning. Texas Public Radio's Paul Flav reports.
This Texas inmate says the best way to describe what it's like to be in a Texas prison cell without air conditioning is to think barbecue.
Like you're standing over a grill all day.
It's like standing over a grill all day. We aren't using this inmate's name because Texas prison rules bar him from giving phone interviews, and he worries about retribution from administrators. He says he goes to bed drenched in sweat every night and wakes up drenched every day. In between, he tries to stay cool by dousing himself in water.
The lowest you are, the cooler it is. So I put water on my ground and lay in it sometimes. You're pretty much naked in the cell.
Data from the Texas Department of Criminal Justice obtained from a state lawmaker show its 68 prisons without air conditioning were sweltering last month, averaging well over 85 degrees. That would be a safety violation for a county jail that mandates temperatures remain below 85. But no such regulation exists for state prisons, some of which reached as high as 106 degrees last month. And those readings weren't taken at the height of the facility's heat. Heat estimates are as high as 115 degrees.
You know, it's hot. It's hot.
Don Aldaco spent 14 years in unair-conditioned prisons across Texas. He was paroled in April. Aldaco says he was lucky to get 3 hours of sleep a night on the hottest days.
Sometimes I wake up in the middle of the night where I'm pouring sweat. You know, I'm pouring sweat, but I'm thinking that I've got something crawling on me, but it's the actual sweat pouring off your body.
Aldaco says he's lucky to get 3 hours of sleep a night on the hottest days. A spokeswoman for the state prison system says they take special precautions for heat-sensitive inmates, keeping them in air-conditioned beds. For everyone else, they offer limited access to respite or air-conditioned areas, and when possible, offer additional showers, ice, and allow for personal fans. But the inmate in a North Texas prison we spoke with says those efforts aren't enough, and he says correction officers blame an ongoing staffing crisis.
The excuse for everything is the staff, people that got the staff. We're not getting showers. You might get shower once or twice a week. You might go to rec once or twice a week. You get cold water once or twice a day. And the excuse always is the staff.
The inmate says he's concerned about his health. A 2022 study by the Journal of the American Medical Association found 271 prisoner deaths in Texas facilities without air conditioning between 2001 and 2019 may be attributable to extreme heat days.
I think it is very well documented that heat has contributed to deaths in this prison system.
Texas State House Member Joe Moody, a Democrat, has for years tried to pass legislation to air condition all state prisons.
There's no need for us to continue to allow folks to cook in our prisons. And that's something we should just always find unacceptable.
House Rep. Moody's bill again failed. Then the Republican-dominated state Senate stripped $500 million out of the budget bill that would have dramatically increased air conditioning in prisons throughout the system. I'm Paul Flav in San Antonio.
And Paul Flav has more. He's learned that Texas has raised the amount of a bottle of water costs inside its prisons for inmates 50% in the last month. Here's his reporting on that.
Amy Aguilar says the 50% increase to bottled water in the Texas Department of Criminal Justice commissary will likely come out of her paycheck. When the San Antonio resident was asked why her boyfriend doesn't just use the tap in his cell at the Ferguson unit, 90 minutes north of Houston,
I actually beg him not to.
She says she's concerned about the smells he describes coming from the faucet.
Do you smell, you know, the sewer? Like, are you smelling sewer? Are you smelling a different kind of rancid? And he goes, you kind of just smell it all. It's just this big old mix of rancid smell.
Don Aldaco, who was recently paroled after 24 years in Texas prison, says the pipes in several facilities he was in were so corroded that he never drank from the tap.
I would always get a piece of sheet, you know, a piece of cloth, piece of sheet, and I would tie it on the actual spigot. I would tie it like a filter. And I would have to change it like every other day because of all the rust and all the crud that's coming out that water.
A spokesman for the state prison system says these claims are false and the water in these units is safe. But real or not, the perception makes the decision to allow a price rise of 50% for bottled water all the more controversial, especially given the heat wave engulfing the state and the lack of air conditioning in 2/3 of the state's prisons.
Wow. Well, that certainly sounds like price gouging, doesn't it?
Michelle Deitch is director of the Prison and Jail Innovation Lab at the University of Texas, Austin. She says she isn't privy to the contract nor the necessity for the vendor to raise the price.
But it does seem to me that this is a necessity, particularly during a heat wave. To be doubling the price is absolutely unconscionable.
Royal Pacific Tea Company requested the price rise in March, and it was approved in April. The prisons just rolled out the new price at the end of June, and many inmates are upset, some questioning why it isn't illegal to raise the price during a natural weather event like a heat wave. The company didn't respond to requests for comment. TDCJ initially pointed the finger at the state comptroller, saying they were the ones in charge of the process. When we reached out to the comptroller, a spokesman said that's false and sent emails showing TDCJ approved the price increase. After this story published, prison officials responded that they had initially rejected the price rise and only signed off after they couldn't find a new vendor with the same specifications and volume.
I was not aware of it.
El Paso State House Rep. Joe Moody questions the timing of the increase.
That seems to be a particularly steep jump for the conditions that we're in right now.
Regardless of who's responsible, inmates and their families are the ones bearing the cost or the absence of water. I'm Paul Flavin, San Antonio.
More Texas workers die from extreme heat than in any other state, according to the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Currently, there is no national standard for heat illness protection for workers. San Antonio, Austin Congressman Greg Kassar is calling on President Biden and his administration to step in using the Occupational Health and Safety Administration. I spoke to him about that.
This July, we saw some of the hottest days in recorded human history across the globe. In San Antonio, it's been the hottest streak of days in recorded history in San Antonio. In June, there was a record number of 911 calls for heat exhaustion, again, in the recorded history of San Antonio. So at this time, we should be working together to protect folks from the heat, to protect people out there working in the sun in Texas. But instead, our governor just signed a bill into law getting rid of water break protections and trying to block cities like San Antonio from passing additional protections. And that's just unacceptable, it's dangerous, and it shows how big corporate influences try to strip workers away from their rights in the heart of the climate crisis, in the heart of the heat, rather than protecting them. And so that's why I, on the floor of the United States Congress yesterday, called on President Biden to pass national rules. He has the authority, and in fact, he's actually starting to move forward on pushing forward national rules to protect every Texan and every American out there working in the heat. Give people the right to stop working and go into the shade and get some water if they're overheating. Make sure that construction workers can come off those scaffolds and take a drink of water and not be forced to stay up there in the sun in heat indexes that are regularly passing 110 degrees in places like San Antonio right now.
So OSHA, which is supposed to be a workplace safety administration, there are no national standards for heat illness. Does that need to be looked at?
That is exactly what the president can do to go above the governor and enact heat standards using OSHA. The OSHA protections we currently have, have rules that say employers are supposed to sort of self-police themselves and make sure their workers don't overheat. But that can't be working very well. When we had a 24-year-old in San Antonio die of heat exhaustion, Gabriel Infante, when we just had a Felipe Pascual die in the Houston area, that self-policing under the current OSHA rules is not working. Big corporate moneyed interests continue to push back against President Biden and other presidents trying to stop these heat rule protections, but I, alongside other members of Congress, are now really speaking out and pushing and saying, in places like Texas, we have to stop listening to the big special interests and instead think about the everyday person who's out there working in the sun. And so we need heat protections nationwide, and we actually have the most pro-labor president that I've seen in my lifetime. And so now that I'm in the United States Congress representing San Antonio, working alongside and pushing this administration to override the governor who has taken those water break rules away and is trying to block future water break rules.
San Antonio Metropolitan Health District reports that they have doubled from last year at this time the number of heat-related emergency calls that are happening in San Antonio. They're calling what's happening right now the most dangerous period that they have seen for heat-related illness in the city, and that applies to workers and anyone who is outside. So we have a Department of Labor. Do they have policies? We have a U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics. Are they gathering information? Is the federal government powerless and neutered when it comes to figuring out who's being impacted by this heat? We need data.
The federal government knows, but also everyday people know that we need common sense rules protecting people from the heat. I am now the member of Congress representing both Austin and large parts of San Antonio. So as a new member of Congress, I have the east side of Austin, and I come down through the east side and downtown into the west side of San Antonio representing both cities. And when I started my work, I was actually a labor organizer and heard and worked alongside so many construction workers and landscape workers that there weren't these rules, that the government, for some reason, didn't have protections against the heat. They have all sorts of rules about other things, but not rules protecting working people from the heat. And so I organized alongside construction workers to get Austin City Hall to pass water break laws over a decade ago now. And now, as a member of Congress, I've been working alongside council members in San Antonio to have San Antonio do the same thing, because government has been behind listening to the needs of workers that work outside. And San Antonio was about to pass those same sorts of laws when the governor just passed and signed into law something trying to block cities from passing worker protections and rest break protections. So now it's time to go above all those folks' heads and get something done at the federal level and have a federal government that isn't just recording the data, but that is actually listening to the people. And it's past time. We've been talking about this for years. It's past time for the federal government to just get this done. Of course, I wish that the United States Congress could come together in a bipartisan way and pass a law guaranteeing everybody the right to water breaks. But we haven't seen many takers for that. I mean, I'm on those bills. I'm a co-sponsor and co-author of those bills. But if the Republican-controlled House won't move a bill forward, then we can have the president just enact a rule using his authority under OSHA.
But we have seen postal workers, federal employees, one of them died in Texas.
Yeah, Eugene Gates.
And so this is impacting mail delivery. They're having to adjust their work schedule in order to avoid the hottest part of the days and avoid more fatalities. Do we know how much the heat is impacting overall productivity?
The heat hurts our economy. It hurts the productivity of workers, and it hurts families. It makes no sense to have workers out there working nonstop and not giving them the chance to take a break and go back to the post office and to the station and to take a break. It makes no sense to not let construction workers come off the scaffold and get a drink of water. For many people listening, I bet they go, how could it be that people aren't let off the scaffold or aren't allowed to go and get a drink of water? And most employers I know are trying to do the right thing, but the problem is there are short-sighted employers, and they're exploitative employers. And if there weren't, then we wouldn't have these oftentimes young folks or middle-aged folks out there dying while they're at work. And so we need a baseline rule. And it's really such a shame to see the governor, who is entrusted with the highest position in our state, in the hottest month any of us can remember in the state's history. I mean, I grew up here, born and raised here. Nobody can remember a summer like this. So he picks this summer, instead of passing water break protections, signing a law to get rid of them. And so I think that this is a moment where the public really needs to speak up. Elected officials have to speak up. And we finally got to get something done.
Greg Kassar is a Texas congressman, a Democrat, representing parts of Austin and San Antonio. Texas is leaving a program many states use to check duplicate voter registration and to clean voter rolls. Experts say this move weakens election security in the state. Texas Secretary of State Jane Nelson says the state is leaving the Electronic Registration Information Center in 3 months. Secure Democracy USA's Senior Policy Director Daniel Griffith says he's certain that this move will make Texas elections less secure and make it easier for voters to double vote.
ERIC is a resource that allows states to share information about their voter registration list so that the member states can get together and identify folks who may have moved to another state or might be registered in two locations to really allow all the member states to keep their voter rolls clean. And you know, by withdrawing, Texas is obviously going to lose access to that information to keep its voter rolls clean. And also those states that remain in ERIC are going to lose access to the information from Texas as well. Kind of knew it was coming. Certainly, you know, the legislature this past and passed Senate Bill 1070, which basically said that Texas is going to try to create its own interstate cross-check system, which is basically what ERIC is. But that bill did limit the budget for that system to $100,000, which most people seem to think is insufficient to kind of build something up from scratch, which is what the Secretary of State's office is going to have to do. So, you know, we're definitely concerned that, you know, without access to ERIC, then there's going to be, you know, possible issues. Texas is losing an important tool that allows it to identify voters who may, you know, not need to be registered and to keep their voter rolls clean, which, you know, is something that's really keeping voter rolls clean is, you know, the idea of keeping voter rolls clean is a non-controversial concept. It just seems that the methodology is where the controversy actually comes up.
So Texas is withdrawing from a proven system that cleans the voter rolls while also preventing some individuals from voting twice. They might jump one side of Texarkana and then go on to the other and vote in the other so they could vote twice in a national election. That would be prevented by something like ERIC, right?
Yes, we know that, you know, that sort of process works. We've seen, you know, certainly in several states that the election officials there have actually explicitly said that ERIC helped us identify people who voted. You know, for example, there were folks who voted in both New Jersey and in Florida in 2020. And, you know, the use of the ERIC data allowed those state officials to identify those folks and then, you know, to kind of follow up on that and investigate to see if they might have, you know, broken any laws. And certainly, you know, one, clean up the voter rolls, but then also two, you know, if somebody is actually out there doing something they're not supposed to, ERIC helps investigators actually, you know, find those folks and make sure that they get identified and, you know, they get tried. And if they're found guilty, they're punished. And, you know, people will know that they can't get away with that sort of thing.
The Republican Party is supposed to be the party of every vote counts. No one should be voting illegally. Not a single vote should be cast illegally, improperly. This is seems to be counter to that stand.
I mean, I would say that certainly the loss of ERIC is going to diminish the state's ability and local election administrators' ability to, you know, keep the rolls clean, to identify people, you know, those very rare instances where someone might actually be voting twice. They're going to certainly have less capability to identify those people moving forward without, you know, not being a member of ERIC. And then obviously, you know, there's no replacement that I'm aware of or really anybody in elections is aware of that's going to be able to do the kind of work to give the kind of information to give the tools to election administrators. They're going to, you know, have a less ability to do so now that they don't belong to ERIC. I think it's certainly the case.
We were told as this bill was being debated that Texas would not leave ERIC until there was a substitute that functioned just as well as ERIC, but for a lot less money. It had to be in place before we could leave ERIC. So, and that has not happened.
many observers, us included, were certainly kind of surprised by the timing. We thought certainly, you know, given that the bill just passed in May and just signed by the governor shortly thereafter, that they were going to take some time to, you know, explore what options may be out there, which, you know, as of right now, I'm certainly not aware of anything that does anything close to what Eric does. And, you know, whether it's going to be an outside entity, some private corporation, or if it's going to be the secretary's office themselves developing this sort of thing, it's, you know, it's not something that can be done in a couple of months. You know, Eric's been developing over its work. So to think that that can be replaced in a couple of months doesn't really seem to add up. And, you know, certainly there's no indication that there is a proper substitute in place, which, you know, is obviously worrisome heading into, you know, in very important elections, you know, not only, you know, this year, you know, Harris County has got, I mean, Houston's going to pick a mayor. But then next year, of course, you've got the presidential election and all the federal elections coming up. So, you know, the concerns about the accuracy of the voter rolls is only going to increase in that situation unless there is an adequate substitute in place, which doesn't seem likely in the near term.
Eric was the victim of a loony conspiracy theory, right?
There were some allegations, a couple of them that have been debunked pretty thoroughly. One was around the involvement of George Soros, which is always, for some people, seems to be a very touchy subject.
Well, it's a racist, anti-Semitic trope.
Well, I mean, I think there are certainly people, I don't know that I necessarily, I'm not going to, you know, pass judgment as far as that goes. But
well, I will.
Okay, understood. You know, there was definitely his involvement that was problematic for a lot of folks. I think the other issue is that there were also some debunked theories that that the data wasn't being kept private and was being shared out. That hasn't been proven and has actually been debunked as well.
Can we say that it's highly likely that Texas leaving Eric weakens voter protection in the state?
I think you can go beyond highly likely. I think it's certain. That it weakens the voter protection in the state simply because, you know, election officials are going to lose access to data about those voters. And there's just nothing that replaces that wealth of information and gives Texas election officials that same ability to, you know, make sure that voter rolls are accurate and have the information about voters in that sort of interstate sense that Eric does.
One of the complaints from the right about Eric in Texas is that it costs too much money. Texas was awash in money in the last legislative session, billions and billions of dollars. Did it cost that much?
What I understand as far as the complaint, I think it's less about the cost as opposed to what the money was spent on. You know, my understanding of Texas in terms of the dues they were paying for Eric was around somewhere between $135,000 to $150,000 a year to be a member. And that's based on, you know, on Texas's population, which is obviously going to be greater than, you know, all the other member states of Texas, all the other member states of Eric. So, you know, it's scaled that way. But the bigger cost that was complained about was the requirement for Eric member states to actually take the information given and also, you know, not only keep your voter rolls clean, but reach out to people who have moved into the state who may be eligible but aren't registered. That has seemed to have been a concern not only for Texas, but for other states. That is, my understanding is that's a higher cost, but, you know, I would certainly think that, again, trying to reach out to eligible voters is a cost worth bearing. If there are people who are eligible and able to vote, then you would think that election officials would be very motivated to reach out and find those folks.
Daniel Griffith is Secure Democracy USA Senior Policy Director. That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can email us at texasmatters@tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs on our website at tpr.org, and you can download, subscribe, and rate us wherever you get cool podcasts. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.
Support for TPR comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' comp provider committed to helping employers get their people home safely. Preventing workplace accidents protects families and keeps businesses productive. More at texasmutual.com.